Blog Talk Radio.
The Initiative Radio Network proudly presents the Ant Canary Experience, hosted by Brother Anthony.
May 9, 2017, 8 o'clock on the East Coast. Welcome to the Ant Canary Experience, where we talk about Black history, 365 days of the year, or every week whenever I'm on live with you. Thank you for listening tonight. If you want to call in, 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. We're going to be talking about the infamous Willie Lynch letter, whether or not this is real or fake. I'm going to actually read the entire letter to you in case you've never heard it before. Got a few clips I want to play those, all that kind of stuff. So if you got anything to talk about, question or whatever, please call in. We're going to be here until about 10 o'clock, 563-999-3682. And as we always do on the show, if you're new listening to the show, welcome. Every week what I do is not only do I talk about, usually bring up a story about something in black history, I also do what I call my weekly Trump diss, because I am not a fan of the current president. So every week I play a clip of something dumb or something that he's done or said or whatever. Well, I'm sitting here right now with the news on, in case you don't know or you haven't heard yet. He decided to fire the FBI director today. And this has been all over the news ever since it happened. People are equating this to Watergate. Some of you may be too young to remember Watergate, but that had a very serious issue with a Republican president back in the 70s, early 70s, where he had to leave office because of the stupid stuff that he did. And right now people are on the news comparing what your president has done today to be pretty much the equivalent of Watergate. So right now the story is hot. This is a hot mess. This guy is about as dumb as a bag of bricks. And every day he does something dumber and dumber and dumber. This is why I don't like him. He doesn't have a lick of sense. The only reason why he's in office because racist white folk wanted him in office, because we had a black president in there for 8 years. They were bent out of shape, and they just had to get another white guy in the White House, no matter what this clown was about, no matter what he said, what he did, it didn't matter. They were determined to get a white man back into the White House, not a white woman, but a white man, and they got voted for this clown. He's already fucking up. Let's be honest. He's already fucking up. So he fires the FBI director, even though I think that this guy helped him get elected with the lies and everything else that they said. And, it took a foreign country and a lot of emails to get this clown elected. And now look what he's doing. And all I got to say is thank you, people that voted for this chucklehead. Thank you, because I didn't vote for him. So thank you, people that voted for this clown. Now, everybody all over the world is looking at this mess and laughing at us, because this is some serious shit. Be honest with you, very serious. This is some serious mess that we're into right now. So it's something that'll keep playing out, no doubt about it. So I'm going to play that clip for you in just a second, but the main topic tonight is Willie Lynch. We're going to be talking about that letter. So before I do anything, I'm going to do our commercial. I'll get our commercial out of the way, and then we will be back. We will talk about, we'll be back. We'll play the weekly Trump diss, and then we're going to get into topic of the night, talking about the Willie Lynch letter. So after I play the commercial, let me get the right commercial here. All right. After we play the commercial, we'll be right back.
February of 1926, historian Carter G. Woodson launched Negro History Week, which later became Black History Month. On the Aunt Canary Experience, we celebrate Black History 12 months a year. Hi, I'm Aunt Canary, host of the Aunt Canary Experience, the show for all things about our history, not history. On the Experience, we also talk about current events that affect the Black community in the country. So join me every Tuesday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. to get your weekly Black History lesson. You can listen live or call me at 563-999-3682. I talk about topics that schools are afraid to tell our children about. That's every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Please check out the Aunt Canary Experience.
Okay, we're back. We're going to play the weekly Trump diss. And what this clip is about, it's talking about, it's about a six-minute clip. And it's talking, reporters are talking to people that voted for Trump. And now they're beginning to regret voting for him. And this this was done a while ago. I'm not sure how long ago it was recorded. But you got to think, between that being recorded and now what's going on today, I gotta imagine there are a whole lot of people that are upset for voting for this clown, because it's like every day he gets more and more shit. The day he's almost neck deep in it, the stuff that he's doing. So I'm gonna play this clip, and then when we come back from playing the clip, we're gonna jump right into this Willie Lynch controversy. And I am going to read you the actual letter and then play the clip and take your phone calls and all that good stuff. So listen to this, and I'll be right back.
Presidency, and it's time for part three of our Trump voter panel. During the campaign and since President Trump took office, I've sat down with a group of diehard Trump voters to gauge their feelings on his progress. So how do they feel now about some of his shifting positions? As usual, they have strong opinions. But I do want to get all of your takes on what some call flip-flop, some call 180-degree turn. Listen to this.
I said, here's the problem with NATO. It's obsolete. I said it was obsolete. It's no longer obsolete.
We're going to have a great relationship with Putin and Russia.
Right now, we're not getting along with Russia at all. We may be at an all-time low in terms of relationship with Russia.
How do you feel?
Look
about
at the
that?
Dates there.
Mm-hmm.
The dates are a year apart. The dates reflect a time when he was not the president, when he was not privy to some of the materials he'd be provided as the president, some of the highly confidential secret materials.
Sure, but I mean, does he need a confidential secret material to know that NATO is relevant?
Well, he had a change of opinion. He changed his mind.
And you're comfortable
with
that?
I am comfortable with that, because I feel that we're all entitled to change with circumstances, with timing.
It's foolish to hold on to a particular view and then be shown evidence for something else.
But you're comfortable that he now believes in working with NATO, that he now believes in getting involved, if need be, in Syria, that he now no longer believes that China is a currency manipulator. You're comfortable with his changes of position.
I'm satisfied with him. I believe that that everything's fluid, and you can't make an informed decision if you don't have the proper information.
Did you feel that he was not informed during the campaign?
I think he was as informed as they could get, they could make him.
Yeah. He wasn't the president.
Go ahead, Scott.
That's not true. He goes behind closed doors just like the President Obama did of the United States. He gets first-hand information like everybody else does. As the president,
that's
a bunch of crap, and you all know it. No. It's a bunch of crap. Let me calm down here. He goes behind closed doors. He got secure information on this country, just like Mrs. Clinton did
before he was elected.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And why would they hide information like that to somebody that's going to become the next possible president of the United States? That's right.
Now,
come on. I know you just all you did.
She was Secretary of State,
yes.
So she was
kidding me.
Already
No, Paula. They got
and
classified briefings. He did. Once they were the
right.
Nominees,
right.
They got classified
then,
briefings.
Well,
hold on.
Exactly.
Alex, you're comfortable with his shifts in position.
Except for the Chinese currency.
Why not?
Thing.
Why aren't you comfortable with that one?
Because China is a currency manipulator.
So why is he saying now, no, they're not?
Because, unfortunately, he needs China.
Exactly.
That's
but
exactly
you know what?
Right.
But you see, but here again, that sometimes you have to negotiate
and make
because
a deal.
Because if you need
deal,
China right now.
He's going to give him a deal because he wanted the country to bomb the place and he needs help now.
You know what?
Listen, he started the war. He should go in there and finish the goddamn thing.
You know what? You know,
he didn't start the
war.
No.
You know what?
Did any other country bomb Syria?
Come
on. Yeah, no, that was Obama.
What happened in Syria was disgusting. It was sad. And he went in there and he
dealt with it.
So why did he say before that, during the campaign?
Because it didn't happen.
We didn't. Wait,
but
there have been attacks
on civilians. But there have been. I get it.
For
years. I get it. But
why was he hands off then?
But what did Obama do? doing all this. Obama had that red line.
Trump bombed the country. And Obama didn't bomb the country.
Back in history, but why
Trump
are you comfortable with Mr. Trump shifting positions?
Because at this point in time, he had a situation where he had to deal with, and did we want to take the chance of the next day taking these people, these poor innocent people, and gassing them again?
Right. Craig, how are you feeling about all of this? I mean, I know that you've been listening intently to your fellow panelists.
And I'm going to say, you know, Donald Trump, President Trump, we all gave him a pass because he wasn't a politician. But he's starting to fit the bill. But he's also human. And I have to agree with some of these other panelists that we just can't sit back and let a leader of a country annihilate their population.
Are you comfortable with where the administration is today on North Korea?
I'm not.
Go ahead. What are you doing?
I'm not, plain and simple. Because you know what? If these panelists believe, some of the panelists believe, that he gets the wrong information and goes into North Korea and does something stupid, it could be detrimental to this country. It really could.
Are you comfortable with the tough talk against North Korea?
You know what? I'll take any tough talk from President Trump if he's going to back it up. But he's not backing it up.
What can we do, though? We've got a leader of a country that has been flaunting the fact that he has these missiles, and he sends them out. Do we have to wait until one of them is nuclear-tipped and takes out one of our allies?
Absolutely not.
Do we
I'm
have to wait for that? Then I have to agree that, you know, we as a country need to say, you know, we're not going to turn our head anymore. You know, this is something that I'm very passionate about.
You think tough talk will take care of that?
Look, I don't know about the tough talk, okay?
First you have to talk and try to come to a resolution. And the guy's a maniac. He's insane. But
I know you're talking about Kim Jong-un.
I'm glad you clarified it. But if you don't sit down and talk and you start with the weapons, then there's no chance to try to get a resolution here and try to make peace.
Okay. Donald Trump's campaign slogan, Make America Great Again, what does that mean to these voters as we approach the 100th?
Okay. And as you heard from that clip, there's just some people that will just follow this knucklehead to the ends of the earth. I guarantee you right about now, they're concerned about what's going on in the news as we speak. He fired, in case you don't know it, you know, getting in on this late, he fired the FBI director today. So this is going to be a hot mess. I'm sure next week I'll probably be back on with a few clips about this. But we're going to jump into what the topic of tonight's program is. And this is what we're talking about tonight is the Willie Lynch letter. And I'm sure a lot of you have probably heard about this. I'm going to read the actual letter to you in just a second. So if you want to, you want to call in now before I read the letter, have a question or comment or whatever, please feel free to do that. I got a couple of things I'm going to read to you before I actually read the letter. So there's going to be a few minutes before I actually read this letter. And this is about, let's see, this letter, I guess you could say it's 10 pages. But I've got it printed front and back, so it's about 5 pages. So I guess you'd say it's maybe 10 pages long, but I've got it printed front and back. And I'm going to read the entire letter word for word in case you haven't heard it. I'll let you know right before I get ready to read it. So if you want to, you can just sit back and listen to me read it. Or if you want to call in, go ahead and call in now before I read the letter. And I had a call, but it dropped. But if you want to call back, please feel free to do so. Number to call in is 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. And let me give you a little bit of background on what I'm going to see tonight. Now, we're going to start off. This is titled William Lynch Speech. Okay. The William Lynch Speech is an address purportedly delivered by a certain William Lynch, or as some people have been calling him, Willie Lynch, to an audience on the bank of the James River in Virginia in 1712 regarding control of slaves within the colony. It is considered to be a hoax. The letter purports to be a verbatim account of a short speech given by a slave owner in which he tells other slave masters that he has discovered the secret to controlling black slaves by setting them against one another. The document has been in print since at least 1970, but first gained widespread notice in the 1990s when it appeared on the internet. Since then, it has often been promoted as an authentic account of slavery during the 18th century, though its inaccuracies and anachronisms have led historians to conclude that it is a hoax. The reputed author William Lynch identifies himself as the master of a modest plantation in the British West Indies, who has been summoned to the Virginia colony by local slave owners to advise them on problems they have been having managing their slaves. He briefly notes that their current violent method of handling unruly slaves, lynching, though the term is not used, is inefficient and counterproductive. Instead, he suggests that they adopt his method, which consists of exploiting differences such as age and skin color in order to pit slaves against each other. This method, he assures his host, will, quote, control the slaves for at least 300 years, end quote. Some online versions of the text attack introductions, such as a forward attribute to Frederick Douglass. Attach introductions, such as a forward attributed to Frederick Douglass, for citations falsely giving Lynch's name as the source of the word lynching. The text of the speech has been published since at least 1970. It appeared on the internet as early as 1993 when a reference librarian at the University of Missouri St. Louis posted the document on the library's Gopher server. The librarian later revealed that she had obtained the document from the publisher of a local newspaper, St. Louis Black Pages, in which the narrative had recently appeared. Eventually convinced the document was a forgery, the librarian elected to leave it on the Gopher server, and she believed that, quote, even as an inauthentic document, it says something about the former and current state of African America, end quote, but added a warning about its provenance. The text contains numerous anachronisms, including words and phrases such as refueling and foolproof, which were not in use until the early 20th century. Additionally, historian Roy Rosenzweig notes that the divisions emphasized in the text, skin color, age, and gender, are distinctly 20th century in nature and makes little sense in an 18th century context. As such, historians such as Rosenzweig and William Jelani Cobb of Spelman College regard the William Lynch speech as a hoax. Forwards attached to some online versions of the speech credit the narrator's name as a source of the terms lynching and lynch law, despite the narrator specifically advocating against lynching. A man named William Lynch did indeed claim to have originated the term during the American Revolutionary War, but he was born in 1742, 30 years after the alleged delivery of the speech. A document published in the Southern Literary Messenger in 1836 that proposed William Lynch as the originator of the lynch law may have been a hoax perpetrated by Edgar Allan Poe. A better documented early use of the term lynch law comes from Charles Lynch, a Virginia justice of the peace and militia officer during the American Revolution. Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan quoted the speech at the Million Man March in October 1995, making the speech better known in this process. He later cited Willie Lynch's scheme as an obstacle to unite African Americans in his open letter regarding the Millions More movement in 2005. The speech was also quoted during a protest surrounding the 2001 presidential inauguration. Denzel Washington's character quoted extensively from the speech in a scene from the 2007 movie The Great Debaters, which I'm going to play that clip in a second. hip-hop artist Talib Lee, can't ever say his name, of the rap group Black Star references the speech in the song The Definition from the album Mos Def and Talib are Black Star. Hip-hop artist Kendrick Lamar refers to Willie Lynch in his 2015 song off of his junior album To Pimp a Butterfly. Complexion, A Zulu Love, and that's all that I'm going to read on that. The next one I'm going to read right quick is, I don't know if I'm going to read all of this or not, all of this, but this is just pretty much saying, I got this off of the Jim Crow Museum of Racist Memorabilia, and the question, and this is, comes from May 2004, and the question, so it's the question of the month, and it says, and it asks, is Willie Lynch's letter real? So the answer is, I'm not going to read all of this. I'm going to read some of it, and then I'm going to read you the actual speech. See, and the answer to this is, there are many problems with this document, not the least of which is the fact that it is absolutely false. Let me see. Let me read the important parts of it. It says, okay, according to the speech's preface, Master Lynch was convinced enough the fortunes of his slaveholding brethren in the American colonies to present a lecture on the bank of the James River explaining how to keep unruly servants united. The old, he argued, should be pitted against the young, the dark against the light, the male against the female, and so on. Such the unifying tactics will control the slaves for at least 300 years, guaranteed, and that, it seems, is why black people can't get ahead now. Considering the limited number of extant sources from the 18th century, if this speech had been discovered, it would have been the subject of incessant historical panels, scholarly articles, and debates. It would literally be a career-making find, but the letter was never discovered. Rather, it simply appeared on the Internet, bypassing the official historical circuits, making its way directly into the canon of American racial... I'm not going to say that big word because it's too late in the night. In other words... on a more practical level, the speech is filled with references that are questionable, if not completely inaccurate. Lynch makes reference to an invitation reaching him on his modest plantation in the West Indies. While this is theoretically possible, the plantation system was well established in the Caribbean by 1712. Most plantation owners were absentees who chose to remain in their colonizing country, while the day-to-day affairs of their holdings were run by hired managers and overseers. But even assuming that Mr. Lynch was an exception to this practice, much of the text of his quote-unquote speech remains anachronistic. Lynch makes constant reference to slaves, which again is possible, though it is far more likely people during this era would refer to persons in bondage as simply as Negroes. In the first paragraph, he promises that ancient Rome would envy us if my program is implemented. But the word program did not enter the English language with this connotation until 1837. At the time of this speech, it was used only to reference a written notice for theater events. Two paragraphs later, he said that he will give an outline of action for slaveholders. The word outline has appeared only 50 years earlier, and at that time was only used as an artistic term meaning a sketch. It didn't convey its meaning, its present meaning, until 1759. Even more damning is his use of the terms indoctrination and self-refueling in the next sentence. First word didn't carry its current connotation until 1832. Second, didn't even enter the language until 1811, a century after the purported date of Lynch's speech. More obviously, Lynch uses the word black with an uppercase B to describe African Americans more than two centuries before the word came to be applied as a common ethnic identifier. In some popular citations, Lynch has been explicitly credited the term lynching, which would be odd since the speech promises to provide slaveholders with nonviolent techniques that will save them the expense of killing valuable, if unruly, property. This inaccuracy points to a more basic problem in understanding American history. The violence directed at black people in America was exceptional in regard that it was radicalized and was then used to reinforce political and social subordination, but it was not unique. Early America was incredibly violent in general, stemming in part from the endemic violence in British society, and partly from the violence that tends to be associated with frontier societies. For most of its history, lynching was a non-racial phenomenon. In fact, it was most often directed at white people. The term lynch law was derived from the mob violence directed at Tories or British loyalists just after the American Revolution. While there is disagreement about the precise origins of the term, some associated it with Charles Lynch, a Revolution-era justice of the peace who imprisoned Tories. Others see it as the legacy of an armed militia founded near the Lynch River with a militia captain named Lynch, who created judicial tribunals in Virginia in 1776. There is no reference to the term earlier in 1768, more than a half century after the date given for the speech. So in the last paragraph I read, the Willie Lynch speech seemed to give a quick and easy explanation for the roots of our much-lamented black disunity. You could make similar arguments about the lingering effects of a real historical document like the 1845 tract, Religious Instruction of Negroes, written by a pro-slavery Presbyterian minister, or the British practice of mixing different African ethnicities on slave ships in order to make communication and therefore rebellion more difficult. But this too is questionable. It presumes that whites or any other diverse group do not face diverse gender issues, generation gaps, and class distinctions. Willie Lynch offers no explanation for the white pro-lifer who guns down a white abortion provider or white-on-white domestic violence. He does not explain political conflicts among different Latino groups or crime in Asian communities. Unity is not the same as unanimity, and in the end, black people are no more disunited than any other group of people. A lot more united than we give ourselves credit. So this was written back in 2004. Okay, so what I'm going to do now, I am going to read the entire speech. So if you want to call in, you can wait until I finish. And I'll try to read this as quick as I can, but I want to make sure that I read it so that everybody that has never heard this read, I'm going to read you the entire letter. And then if you want, you can call in and get out the number before I start reading. The number 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. So here we go. This is entitled The Willie Lynch Letter, The Making of a Slave. This speech was delivered by Willie Lynch on the bank of the James River in the colony of Virginia, 1712. Lynch was a British slave owner in the West Indies. He was invited to the colony of Virginia in 1712 to teach his methods to slave owners there. The term lynching is derived from his last name. And we all know that's not true. But anyway, I'm just going to read you a letter. December 25th, 1712. Gentlemen, I greet you here on the bank of the James River in the year of our Lord, 1712. First, I shall thank you, the gentlemen of the colony of Virginia, for bringing me here. I am here to help you solve some of your problems with slaves. Your invitation reached me on my modest plantation in the West Indies, where I have experimented with some of the newest and still the oldest methods for control of slaves. Ancient Romans would envy us if my program is implemented. As our boat sailed south on the James River, named for our illustrious king, whose version of the Bible we cherish, I saw enough to know that your problem is not unique. Our Rome used cords of wood as crosses for standing human bodies. Along its highways in great numbers, you are here using the tree and the rope on occasions. I caught a whiff of a dead slave hanging from a tree a couple of miles back. You are not only losing valuable stock by hangings, you are having uprisings, slaves are running away, your crops are sometimes left in the fields too long for maximum profit. Suffer occasional fires, your animals are killed. Gentlemen, you know what your problems are. I do not need to elaborate. I am not here to enumerate your problems. I am here to introduce you to a method of solving them. In my bag here, I have a foolproof method of controlling your black slaves. I guarantee every one of you that if installed correctly, it will control the slaves for at least 300 years. My method is simple. Any member of your family or your overseer can use it. I have outlined a number of differences among the slaves that makes the differences bigger. I use fear, distrust, and envy to control. These methods have worked on my modest plantation in the West Indies, and it will work throughout the South. Take this simple little list of differences and think about them. On top of my list is age, but it's there only because it starts with an A. The second is color or shade. There is intelligence, size, sex, size of plantations, and status on plantations. Attitude of owners, whether the slaves live in the valley, on a hill, east, west, north, south, have fine hair, coarse hair, or is tall or short. Now that you have a list of differences, I shall give you an outline of action. But for that, I shall assure you that distrust is stronger than trust, and envy is stronger than adulation, respect, or admiration. The black slaves, after receiving this indoctrination, shall carry on and will become self-refueling and self-generating for hundreds of years, maybe thousands. Don't forget, you must pitch the old black male versus the young black male and the young black male against the old black male. You must use the dark-skinned slaves versus the light-skinned slaves and the light-skinned slaves versus the dark-skinned slaves. You must use the female versus the male and the male versus the female. You must also have your white servants and overseers distrust all blacks. It is necessary that your slaves trust and depend on you, on us. They must love, respect, and trust only us. Gentlemen, these kits are your keys to control. Use them. Have your wives and children use them. Never miss an opportunity. If used intensely for 1 year, the slaves themselves will remain perpetually distrustful of each other. Thank you, gentlemen. Let's make a slave. It was the interest and business of slaveholders to study human nature, and the slave nature in particular, with a view to practical results. I and many of them attained astonishing proficiency in this direction. We had to deal not with earth, wood, and stone, but with men, and by every regard they had for their own safety and prosperity, they me that you know the material on which they were to work. Conscious of the injustice and wrong they were every hour perpetrating and knowing what they themselves would do. Were they the victims of such wrongs? They were constantly looking for first signs of the dreaded redistribution. Retribution. They watched. Therefore, with skilled and practiced eyes and learned to read with great accuracy, the state of mind and heart of the slave through his sable face. Unusual, so briefly apparent, abstractions, sullenness, and indifference, indeed, any mood out of the common has afforded ground for suspicion and inquiry. Let's see. Let us make a slave. What do we need? First of all, we need a black nigger man, a pregnant nigger woman, and her baby nigger boy. Second, we will need the same basic principle that we use in breaking a horse, combined with some more sustaining factors. What we do with horses is that we break them from one form of life to another. That is, we reduce them from their natural state in nature. Whereas nature provides them with the natural capacity to take care of their offspring, we break that natural strain of independence from them, and thereby cause a dependency status so that we may be able to get from them useful production for our business and pleasure. Next section is entitled Cardinal Principles for Making a Negro. For fear that our future generations may not understand the principles of breaking both the beasts together, the nigger and the horse, we understand that short-range planning economics result in periodic economic chaos, so that to avoid turmoil in the economy requires us to have breadth and depth and long-range comprehensive planning, articulating both skill-sharp perceptions. We lay down the following principles for long-range comprehensive economic planning. Both horse and niggers is no good to the economy in the wild or natural state. Both must be broken and tied together for orderly production. For orderly future, special and particular attention must be paid to the female and the youngest offspring. Both must be crossbred to produce a variety and division of labor. Both must be taught to respond to a peculiar new language. Psychological and physical instruction of containment must be created for both. We hold the six cardinal principles as truth to be self-evident based upon the following: the discourse concerning the economics of breaking and tying the horse and the nigger together, all inclusive of the six principles laid down about. Note, neither principle alone will suffice for good economics. All principles must be employed for orderly good of the nation. Accordingly, both a wild horse and a wild or nature nigger is dangerous, even if captured, for they will have the tendency to seek their customary freedom, and in doing so might kill you in your sleep. You cannot rest. They sleep while you are awake and are awake while you are asleep. They are dangerous near the family house, and it requires too much labor to watch them away from the house. Above all, you cannot get them to work in this natural state. Hence, both the horse and the nigger must be broken. That is, breaking them from one form of mental life to another. Keep the body, take the mind. In other words, break the will to resist. Now, the breaking process is the same for both the horse and the nigger, only slightly varying in degrees. As we said before, there is an art in long-range economic planning. You must keep your eye and thoughts on the female and the offspring of the horse and the nigger. A brief discourse in offspring development will shed light on the key to sound economic principles. Pay little attention to the generation of original breaking, but concentrate on future generations. Therefore, if you break the female mother, she will break the offspring in its early years of development, and when the offspring is old enough to work, she will deliver it to you, for her normal female protective tendencies will have been lost in the original breaking process. For example, take the case of the wild stud horse, a female horse, and an already infant horse, and compare the breaking process with two captured nigger males in the natural state, pregnant nigger woman with her infant offspring. Take the stud horse, break him for limited containment. Completely break the female horse until she becomes very gentle, whereas you or anybody can ride her in her comfort. Breed the mare and the stud until you have the desired offspring. Then you can turn the stud to freedom until you need him again. Train the female horse where she will eat out of your hand, and she will in turn train the infant horse to eat out of your hand also. When it comes to breaking the uncivilized nigger, use the same process. Vary the degree and step up the pressure so as to do a complete reversal of the mind. Take the meanest and most restless nigger, strip him of his clothes in front of the remaining nigger male niggers, female, the nigger infant, tar and feather him, tie each leg to a different horse faced in opposite directions, set him a fire, and beat both horses to pull him apart in front of the remaining nigger. Next step is to take the bull whip and beat the remaining nigger male to the point of death in front of the female and the infant. Don't kill him, but put the fear of God in him, for he can be useful for future breeding. This next section is entitled The Breaking Process of the African Woman. Take the female and run a series of tests on her to see if she will submit to your desires willingly. Take her in every way, because she is the most important factor for good economics. If she shows a sign of resistance in submitting completely to your will, do not hesitate to use the bullwhip. To use the bullwhip on her to extract that last bit of resistance out of her. Take care not to kill her, for in doing so, you spoil good economics. When in complete submission, she will train her offsprings in the early years to submit to labor when they become of age. Understanding is the best thing. Therefore, we shall go deeper into this area of the subject matter concerning what we have produced here in this breaking process of the female nigger. We have reserved the relationship in her natural uncivilized state. She would have a strong dependency on the uncivilized nigger male, and she would have a limited protective tendency toward her independent male offspring, and would raise male offsprings to be dependent like her. Nature had provided for this type of balance. We reserved nature by burning and pulling a civilized nigger apart and bullwhipping the other to the point of death, all in her presence. By her being left alone, unprotected, with the male image destroyed, the ordeal caused her to move from her psychological dependent state to a frozen independent state. In this frozen psychological state of independence, she will raise her male and female offspring in reverse roles. For fear of the young male's life, she will psychologically train him to be mentally weak and dependent, but physically strong. Because she has become psychologically independent, she will train her female offsprings to be psychologically independent. What have you got? You have got the nigger woman out front and the nigger man behind and scared. This is a perfect situation of sound sleep and economic. For the breaking process, we had to be alertly on guard at all times. Now we can sleep soundly, for out of frozen fear, his woman stands guard for us. He can. He cannot get past her slaveholding process, molding process. He is a good tool, now ready to be tied to the horse at a tender age. By the time a nigger boy reaches the age of 16, he is soundly broken in and ready for a long life of sound and efficient work and the reproduction of a unit of good labor force. Continually, through the breaking of uncivilized savage nigger, throwing the nigger female savage into a frozen psychological state of independence by killing off the protective male image and by creating a submissive, dependent mind of the nigger male slave, we have created an orbiting cycle that turns on its own axis forever unless a phenomenon occurs and reshifts the position of the male and female slaves. We show what we mean by example. Take the case of the two economic slave units and examine them closely. Next section is entitled The Nigger Marriage. We breed two nigger males with two nigger females. Then we take the nigger males away from them and keep them working and moving. Say one nigger female bears a nigger female and the other bears a nigger male. Both nigger females being without influence of the nigger male image, frozen with the dependent psychology, will raise their offspring into reverse positions. The one with the female offspring will teach her to be like herself, independent and negotiable. We negotiate with her, through her, by her, we negotiate her at will. The one with the nigger male offspring, she being frozen with a subconscious fear for his life, will raise him to be mentally dependent and weak, but psychologically strong in other words, body over mind. Now, in a few years, when these two offsprings become fertile for early reproduction, we will mate and breed them and continue the cycle. That is good, sound, and long-range comprehensive planning. It's entitled Warning Possible Interloping Negatives. Earlier, we talked about the non-economic good of the horse and the nigger and that in their wild or natural state. We talked out the principle of breaking and tying them together for form or early production. Furthermore, we talked about paying particular attention to the female savage and her offspring for orderly future planning. Then, more recently, we stated that by reversing the positions of the male and female savages, we created an orbiting cycle that turns on its own axis forever unless a phenomena occurs and reshifts the positions of the male and the female savages. Now, experts warned us about the possibility of this phenomenon occurring. But they say that the mind has a strong drive to correct and recorrect itself over a period of time. I can touch some substantial original historical base, and they advise us that the best way to deal with the phenomenon is to shave off the brute's mental history and create a multiplicity a phenomenon or illusion of illusions, so that each illusion will twirl in its own orbit, sometimes something similar to floating balls in a vacuum. This creation of a multiplicity of phenomena of illusions entails the principle of cross-breeding the nigger and the horse, as we stated above, the purpose of which is to create a diversified division of labor, thereby creating different levels of labor, different levels of illusion at each connecting level of labor, the results of which is the severance of the points of the original beginnings for each sphere illusion. Since we feel that the subject matter may get more complicated as we proceed in laying down our economic plan concerning the purpose, reason, and effect of crossbreeding horses and niggers, we shall lay down the following definition term for future generations. Orbiting cycle means a thing turning in a given path. Axis means upon which or around which a body turns. Phenomenon means something beyond ordinary conception and inspires awe and wonder. Multiplicity means a great number. Sphere means a globe. Crossbreeding a horse means taking a horse and breeding it with an ass. You get a dumb, backward ass, long-headed mule that is not reproductive nor productive by itself. Crossbreeding niggers means taking so many drops of good white blood and putting them into as many nigger women as possible, varying the drops by various tone that you want, and then letting them breed with each other until another cycle of color appears as you desire. What this means is this. Put the niggers and the horse in a breeding pot, mix some asses and some good white blood, and what do you get? You get a multiplicity of colors of ass backward, unusual niggers running tied to a backward ass, long-headed mule, the one productive of itself, the other sterile, the one constant, the other dying. You keep the nigger constant, or we may replace the mules or another tool. Both mule and the nigger tied to each other, neither knowing where the other came from, and neither productive for itself nor without each other. Next section is entitled Control the Language. Crossbreeding completed for further severance from their original beginning, you must completely annihilate the mother tongue from both the new nigger and the new mule and institute a new language that involves the new life's work of both. You know, language is a particular institution. It leads to the heart of a people. The more a foreigner knows about the language of another country, the more he is able to move through all levels of that society. Therefore, if the foreigner is an enemy of the country to the extent that he knows the body of the language, to that extent, is the country vulnerable to attack or invasion of a foreign culture. For example, if you take a slave, if you teach him all about your language, he will know all your secrets, and he is then no more a slave. You can't fool him any longer. For example, if you told a slave that he must reform in getting out, quote unquote, our crops, and he knows the language well, he would know that our crops didn't mean our crops, and the slavery system would break down, or he would relate on the basis of what our crops really meant. So you have to be careful in setting up the new language for the slaves who would soon be in your house talking to you man to man, and that is death to our economic system. In addition, definitions of words or terms are only a minute part of the process. Values are created and transported by communication through the body of the language. A total society has many interconnected value systems. All the values in the society have bridges of language to connect them for orderly working in the society. But for these language bridges, these many value systems would sharply clash and cause internal strife or civil war, the degree of the conflict being determined by the magnitude of the issues or relative opposing strength in whatever form. For example, if you put a slave in a hog pen and train him to live there and incorporate him to value it as a way of life completely, the biggest problem you would have out of him is that he would worry you about provisions to keep the hog pen clean, or the same hog pen and make a slip and incorporate something in his language whereby he comes to value a house when he does his hog pen. You got a problem. He will soon be in your house. It is never too late to get off your knees and fight. And that's all I got. That's how it ends. So if you have any questions about that or want to actually read the letter yourself, you can always get online and look it up and read it for yourself. That's a pretty long letter, and a lot of that stuff I understood most of it. A lot of it was like, what in the hell is this guy talking about? But that's the letter in a nutshell, in case you were wondering, you know, about it. Okay. So what I'm going to do now, line everything up. So for the next hour, it's 9 o'clock. So for the next hour, I'm going to play. I only have three clips. They're not very long. Let's see. I got one that's about 10 minutes long. So they're not very long. Excuse me, a long dead day. So what we do, I'll play the clips, come and do a little more talking, and then we'll call it a show. But if you want to call in before we wrap it up or whatever, if you want to call in, please call in at 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. And this first clip is a clip talking about earlier from the movie The Great Debaters with Denzel Washington.
I'll take the affirmative. Take the meanest, most restless nigger. Strip him of his clothes in front of the remaining male niggers, female niggers, and nigger infants. Tar and feather him. Tie each leg to a horse facing an opposite direction, set him on fire, and beat both horses until they tear him apart in front of the male, female, and nigger infants. Bullwhip and beat the remaining nigger males within an inch of their life. Do not kill them, but put the fear of God in them, for they can be useful for future breeding. Anybody know who Willie Lynch was? Anybody? Raise your hand. No one? He was a vicious slave owner in the West Indies. The slave masters in the colony of Virginia were having trouble controlling their slaves, so they sent for Mr. Lynch to teach them his methods. The word lynching came from his last name. His methods were very simple, but they were diabolical. Keep the slave physically strong, but psychologically weak and dependent on the slave master. Keep the body, take the mind. I and every other professor on this campus are here to help you to find, take back, and keep your righteous mind. Because obviously you have lost it.
Okay. That was a clip from the movie The Great Debaters. The second clip is entitled The Willie Lynch Syndrome. Willie Lynch Syndrome.
The teachings of Mr. William Lynch. Throughout the history of the children of Israel, this renamed so-called Negro, Yahweh, the God of Israel, has always used the other nations that he has created to chasten his chosen nation. This is evident when the Holy Bible is studied, the Willie Lynch letter is read, and the conditions of this so-called black people is observed. The nations have always been the strap Yahweh used for the disobedience and rebellion of his children. From the many Hamite nations surrounding them during their calling, to the four empires brought upon them while established in the promised land, none other captivity altered the culture, moral values, or family structure of the children of Israel, such as this extension of the Roman Empire here in America. Willie Lynch was an authoritarian and strict slave owner in the West Indies, summoned to Virginia in 1712 to introduce his methods of slave control through role reversals and various forms of separation from within the family structure. This would only be the fulfilling of the curses placed on the children of Israel for folly and error. The things we see are controlled by the being we cannot. Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 47 through 50. Because you serve not Yahweh, your Elohim, with joyfulness and gladness of heart, for the abundance of all things, therefore shall you serve your enemies, which Yahweh shall send against you, in hunger, and in thirst, and in nakedness, and in want of all things. And he shall put a yoke of iron upon your neck, until he has destroyed you. Yahweh shall bring a nation against you from far, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flies, a nation whose language you shall not understand, a nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young. Israel fell victim to this curse as America dealt wisely with them, using Mr. Lynch's keep the body and take the mind philosophy, or in other words, break their will to resist. This, as he stated, will cause the cycle to be, quote, self-refueling, end quote, generating for generations. Willie Lynch outlined a number of differences among the slaves, such as skin tone, age, and gender, even to the point of fine hair versus coarse hair, status on and size of plantations, and attitudes of owners towards his slaves. For control purposes, Mr. Lynch informed slave owners in the U.S. that they must highlight these differences, making them bigger, to create fear, envy, and distrust amongst the slaves, stating in his address, "But it is necessary that your slaves trust and depend on us. They must love, respect, and trust only us. If used intensely for 1 year, the slaves will remain perpetually distrustful of each other." Yet Yahweh already warned our people through the prophet Zechariah of these days, informing us that this would be his doing. Zechariah chapter 8, verses 9 through 10. "Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, let your hands be strong, you that hear in these days these words by the mouth of the prophets, which were in the days that the foundation of the house of Yahweh of hosts was laid, that the temple might be built. For before these days there was no hire for man, nor any hire for beast, neither was there any peace to him that went out or came in because of the affliction. For I set all men, every one against his neighbor." And truly, since the civil rights movement of integration, we've become the most diversified, misidentified, do-for-self, individualistic people on the face of the earth. Willie Lynch's self-refueling methods are alive and well today due to Yahweh's curse. Mr. Lynch suggested, pitch the old black males against the young black males, the dark-skinned slaves against the light-skinned slaves, and you must use the female against the male and the male against the female. The latter, though last mentioned, was truly the main objective, male slave versus female slave and female slave versus male slave. Mr. Lynch, a consultant to give technical assistance and insight to the business of chattel slavery, saw the woman as, quote, the most important factor for good economics, end quote. He says, further, there is an art to long-range economic planning. You must keep your eye and thoughts on the female and the offspring, but pay little attention to the generation of original breaking, yet concentrate on future generations. Therefore, if you break the female, she will, in turn, break the offspring in its early years of development. And when the offspring is old enough to work, she will deliver it up to you, for her normal female protective tendencies will have been lost in the original breaking process. This breaking process was designed to destroy the black family by corrupting the image of the black male as a protector and provider, all in the sight of the black female. Lynch discussed tying one nigger male to two horses set in opposite directions. Tar and feather the nigger male, set him on fire, and whip the horses in two different directions. Then, whip the rest of the nigger males to the point of death, all in the sight of the nigger female and children. In the female's natural state, she would have a strong dependency on the male savage. By her being left alone, unprotected, with the male image destroyed, the ordeal caused her to move from a psychological dependent state to a frozen independent state. This would cause her to raise her children in reverse roles. Then you've got the nigger woman out front and the nigger male behind and scared. Yet, This was also prophesied by Jeremiah in chapter 31, verses 22, as states, "How long will you go about, O you backsliding daughter? For Yahweh has created a new thing in the earth. A woman shall compass a man." And today, this holds so true, as the so-called black women of today are choosing corporate careers over marriage. Yet, they haven't much to choose from. According to statistics from the Criminal Justice Department, black men make up only 13% of the U.S. population, yet 30% of all arrestees and 41% of the prison population. The black male image has been destroyed as a protector as well as a provider. The National Urban League released its annual report November, stating the unemployment rate of the black men doubled that of white men last year, bringing it to 27%. But that's only what's reported and documented. Since the diversity created by the ungodly civil rights movement, black families are truly out of the question. In the article, Marriages for White People, presented at WashingtonPost.com, the marriage rate for African Americans has been dropping since the 1960s, and today we have the lowest rate of any racial group in the U.S. In 2001, the U.S. Census said 43.3% of black men and 41.9% of black women in America have never been married. In the period between 1970 and 2001, the overall marriage rate in the U.S. declined by 17%, but for blacks it fell 34%. Willie Lynch's idea was to create an orbiting cycle that turns on its own axis, shaving off the brute's mental history, replacing it with a multiplicity of phenomena of illusions. The purpose, to create a diversified division of labor, thereby creating different levels of labor and different values of illusion at each connecting level of labor, the results of which is the severance of the points of original beginning for each sphere of illusion.
Okay, and the last clip is entitled Willie Lynch Syndrome, and it's asked in the form of a question.
So, Michelle.
Yes.
The Willie Lynch letter, break it down.
Yes, okay. Well, first of all, I'm going to at some point post this link. It's called The Death of the Willie Lynch Letter. Mm-hmm. And I came across it a long time ago when I was in college. I was doing research, and I was in a class called Critical Theories of Hip-Hop Literature. We spent the first day listening to the Reflection Eternal album, and Talib Kweli referenced it, and my heart dropped because I was like, wow, this so-called conscious rapper is talking about Willie Lynch, right? So it just prompted me to just do research and basically just write a piece debunking the whole thing. And what bothers me about it is that so many otherwise intelligent people will claim that, you know, everything that's going on with black people is because of Willie Lynch, and we've got Willie Lynch syndrome, and this speech changed the course of things. I'm like, are you out of your mind? Like, first of all, if you when I post the link, you'll read it. First of all, no reputable man is giving a speech and calling himself Willie. That's number one.
At least make it William Lynch.
Like, it would be William Lynch. Second, the only William Lynch on record was not born for another 30 years. Okay? That's number two. Number three, they say the term lynching comes from William Lynch. No, it does not. Okay? Number four, he talks about how he was writing the speech while looking at a dead slave hanging from a tree. Lynching didn't start until the late 19th century. Okay? Right. This was supposedly written in 1712. The other problem I have, why did this only start surfacing in the latter part of the 20th century? With all the historians and all the people that have been studying slavery, except nobody came across this letter until the late 20th century, 1993-ish to be precise, right?
Right.
These are the problems that I have. And so when I'm speaking with people, because my degree is half in, you know, black studies and things like that, and I've definitely been focused on this, and I talk to people, and they're just like, oh, yes, you know, that whole Willie Lynch thing, that's why we can't get our shit together. This is why black people can never unite. I'm like, actually, it's the fucking conch you're pouring in your hair to straighten it that has gotten in your bloodstream that has affected your sperm and your eggs. because you're breeding these ignorant children that won't read any damn books. That's my theory. Willie Lynch my ass. But that's just that. I'm going to stop being belligerent about it.
Well, I mean, that's real. I mean, because actually I wish that Assar was here, Assar Imhotep, because that's one of his pet peeves too, that, you know, we just pass on information without any type of research.
No thought.
Yeah,
no
it's
thought
like,
at all.
Just a Google search. 98%.
But not even that, but let me tell you, the thing is, what's getting worse about it is that America is being taken over by this anti-education sentiment. And I do a lot of interaction on political boards, you know, a lot of liberals and conservatives and things like that. And the conservatives now are saying that education is wrong, it's bad, it's elitist, because there's a brother who went to Harvard sitting in the office, and
right.
they have a problem with that.
Right.
You know, and so now, yeah, well, now we're telling everybody, oh, education's bad. You get an education. You think you're better than people. What kind of shit is that? Use my language.
I do agree with Sun Nugget that Willie Lynch, he might not be a real person, but the concept, it would be nice if Farrakhan, who I think bought that person or that.
No, Farrakhan did not. He did not bring that.
He bought it to, no, listen to what I'm saying. He brought that to the masses, people's attention, because people was not really up on it until he said that at the Million Man March and then anyone.
No, actually, that's incorrect, brother. I'm sorry. It was 1993. A writer named Ann Taylor cited the Willie Lynch letter.
I'm not saying he invented it. Listen again.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm talking about who brought it to attention. It was not Farrakhan. It was a woman named Ann Taylor in 1993.
Did Ann Taylor have a Million Man March where a million people was listening to her?
No, but she's the one who wrote the paper that even brought it to Farrakhan's attention.
I'm saying who wrote it. I'm saying who brought it to the masses.
No, you know, I'm saying that she cited the person who wrote it, I forget his name, but he was a radical from the 60s, and he wrote it. And it was by her citing it in a paper she wrote that black people became aware of it, that even Farrakhan had got the attention of it. So it was circulating before that.
Let me ask you a question. She actually has the person who wrote the Willie Lynch letter?
The person who, if I Google it right now, it was a brother, and he put out the book about the Willie Lynch letter. And most of the people now that have talked about it, they believe that he wrote it. And he wrote it and put this book out and pretended that it was a real letter. She cited it in a paper that she did, and it caused a lot of African-American scholars, black scholars, to be like, what the fuck is this? And so that's when the attention started coming to it. Because they were like, why has nobody ever heard this before? And come
Did
to find out,
it?
Yeah, I'm going to post all of that when I'm done talking because
yeah.
I'm, like,
yeah,
focused
yeah.
on this. But that's where that came about. And so that circulation, and when Farrakhan and other people started talking about it without proper research, you know, they believe whatever they're going to hear that justifies their point of view. That whole idea about a Willie Lynch syndrome, in hindsight, of course, it sounds perfect, right, that somebody would get up and make this speech to plan on how to work slaves, except the fact of the matter is that slave owners were not concerned about hair texture, skin color, and things like that. They really saw us as property. And so they were concerned more about weight, the type of work we could do, reward systems, and things like that. So, again, the letter also contained words that did not exist in 1712.
Right.
And there was a research on the words that were used that show these words were not even a part of English language. So this is a problem, and that's why it needs to be debunked.
I knew that you, I've known you for a little bit, and I know that that was a major, you know, thing for you like a few years
yeah.
back.
Yeah, it was, because I hate stupidity, and I'm all about taking the intellectual approach to things. And if you just break it down, take it outside of the whole, you know, black this, black that, but just take it at face value on what is written. This is a written document that people are calling a primary source, and they're contributing it to, like, our whole where we are right now. The reason why we hate our nappy hair is because of this Willie Lynch guy who taught people how to, you know, treat their slaves. Fuck out of here. Come on. This is not what happened, okay?
You know,
what happened?
You know what I would like to know? Where's the document? Where is the actual? If you're going to quote an historical,
it does not exist.
Where is it?
It does not exist, and that's the problem. It does not exist. The brother who wrote the book refused to produce it because he didn't have it. That's the bottom line. The man said there is no such document.
Does the concept exist?
the concept of what? That one man can teach, talk slave owners how to train us to hate ourselves for generations? Do I believe that that was a possibility? No. Why? Also, they referred to the South and about slave owners in the South. The idea of a South did not exist in 1712. There was no North and South in 1712. Now, you're talking to an antebellum historian here. So this is why
I'm the concept of us. Thank you, Cosmic. I haven't seen you in a long time. That's why I'm saying that. I haven't. I'm talking about the concept of just, and I agree with you that Willie mm-hmm. Lynch, it was not a real person. There was mm-hmm. no real person named Willie Lynch.
There was no speech.
And I think that what people are running with is the concept of the vision that Willie Lynch letters brought out.
So what are you saying then? Are you saying that it was a real vision?
Huh?
No, what I don't understand is why. See, what annoys me about the whole concept of the Willie Lynch letter is that why do we need to create some fantasy like that in order to break down what actually happened?
Exactly. That's what I'm getting at.
I don't understand why they needed to do that in order to. I mean, we can go through historically and show what happened to us without.
We can show point by point from beginning to end. We can show what happened. Historical documents, proof, and everything. Why do we have to lump it all? The fact that we have so many problems in our community, the fact that we have race issues and skin issues and all these other things, why are we trying to attribute it to a fictional speech when we have so much other proof and reality and truth?
Yeah.
This guy's saying
that,
I'm wrong
that
on
is,
something.
That is absolutely true with that. I think people are more getting into what the letters was about as far as the division of blacks and separation of blacks than the actual historicity of
what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I think they're getting more into the because when Farrakhan said that at the Million Man March, the point I was trying to make was that people was taking that for the facts when he could have prefaced it by saying, and you know, this theory or this story or whatever, but he put it as if that was the actual.
This was the true
document,
and people believe it rather than research. People just took what he said as truth, and I think that's what we're talking about when people are talking out of their ass, and people just take it as truth rather than researching for themselves. So now, when people see black people fighting, oh, that's the Willie Lynch syndrome. Shut the hell up.
Okay, that's the last clip, and. She pretty much put a nice little bow on this. So in closing, I always say every time I do the shows, anything I talk about, please feel free to research it. And that's what they were saying in this clip. So I urge you to, if you want to research it, get some more information about this, just Google search Willie Lynch. Willie Lynch letter, Willie Lynch syndrome, all that good stuff. Get more information about it. But I think this is one of those instances where somebody writes something or says something and pretends that it's historical, it's a fact, and then it kind of goes like a snowball down a hill. It rolls and rolls and gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and then everybody believes it, and then come to find out it was fake. There was one, I couldn't find it, I'm going to keep looking for it, but there was one instance where I read or heard that the actual person that wrote the letter lives in Durham, North Carolina. I've got to research that and see if I can find that. So if I can find that information, then I will bring this subject back up again at a later date. But I heard that somewhere, and I want to look into it. So I think I will. But we're going to close this out because it's usually going to about 10, but I've had been working and I've had a couple of days where I wasn't getting enough rest like I should, so I'm going to close it up and go to sleep and get some rest, get up in the morning and do my usual thing. But I will be back next week with another very interesting topic, something that you probably hadn't heard of before. I'm working on that now, so I'll be back next week for that. So, didn't get any calls tonight. I actually got a call, but it dropped. So, we didn't get any calls. So, I think I'm taking that everybody listening to this. So that's cool. So, but like I said, just research this whenever you get a chance, get some more information or whatever. And then, like I said, I may come back at a later date to come back to this so we can try to get to the bottom of this. But we'll be back next week with another topic on Black history. So thank you for listening. See you next week. Peace out.